Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast, exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. In this episode, obesity medicine specialist and OMA clinical education director, Dr. Nicholas Pennings, interviews Dr. Nikhil Durander, a highlighted speaker from Obesity Medicine 2021 virtual conference, about challenges and solutions for treating obesity in a primary care setting. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
A Cleveland Clinic study found that 78.9% of patients seen by primary care providers were in the overweight or obesity category, with 41.5% having obesity. That would make obesity the most common disease encountered by primary care providers. But only about 1 in 25 patients eligible for treatment receive a prescription for an anti-obesity medication, and only about 1 in 100 eligible patients receive bariatric surgery. In the U.S., there are just over 5,000 physicians board certified in obesity medicine available to treat the approximately 90 million adults that have obesity. That would be one board certified obesity medicine specialist for every 18,000 patients with obesity. With such limited resources, it is clear primary care providers will need to play an essential role in the treatment of patients with obesity. Hi, I'm Dr. Nick Pennings, Chair of Family Medicine at the Campbell University School of Osteopathic Medicine and Executive Director of Clinical Education at the Obesity Medicine Association. And I have with me Nick Durander, PhD, Professor, and Helen Devitt Jones Endowed Chair in the Department of Nutritional Sciences at Texas Tech University. His research focuses on molecular biological aspects of obesity and diabetes, in particular obesity due to microbes, and the clinical treatment of obesity. Dr. Durander spoke at the OMA 2021 Virtual Spring Conference along with Dr. Leah Wiggum. His talk was titled Obesity Management in Primary Care, Challenges and Solutions. Thank you for being with us here today, Dr. Durander.
My pleasure.
So the treatment of obesity begins with starting a discussion. As an obesity medicine specialist, people seek me out to help them manage their weight, but in the primary care setting, patients may not know what to or want to discuss their weight, and primary care providers may not want to or think to discuss a patient's weight. We would not skip the discussion of blood pressure or diabetes in an office visit, but it seems like there's a big disconnect between patients and their provider when it comes to discussing weight management. Would you agree?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And I think due to the pain of stigma, it's a sensitive topic. Obesity is a sensitive topic and should be treated as such. Obesity should not be ignored, but addressed carefully and without judgment. And I can give one example of an opening sentence from a provider to the patient could be, if you want to start this topic about body weight or obesity, this is how I try to frame it usually. I would say your BMI or body mass index, which is calculated from your height and weight, is in a range that shows greater health risk. So the BMI and health risk that it indicates can both be lowered by reducing weight. Would you like us to discuss this briefly? I mean, this is an example of a question I would start with. It is non-judgmental. It is not attacking anybody, not insulting. Yet it states medical facts, and that could start a conversation. That's how I look at it.
And it's more about a discussion about the impact of the patient's weight on their health than just about the patient's weight.
That's right. It is to indicate health risk associated with body weight, which is a concern for a provider, and that is brought out.
Right. So you mentioned concerns about stigma and bias and its impact on patients. So is that, the primary reason why patients are reluctant to discuss their weight with their provider, or are there other reasons involved?
I think there may be. This is not a simple issue, that's complex. One of the studies that I was a part of, it's called Action Study, looked at all the barriers that there may be in exactly this, why people do not get treatment for weight loss or obesity. And this study looked at patient, provider, and employee contributions in or participations in that. And one of the things I would also say is it's a bias or judgment that they may have experienced from provider in the past that would play a role in their hesitancy. It could be about past experience with that or other provider where they sense that providers were, some of them, were unprepared or unwilling to treat obesity. That could be another one. Or it could be that it has also happened that provider would say, well, forget about your weight. We can treat everything that weight causes. I can treat your diabetes. I can treat your cholesterol. So why bother about treating weight instead of obesity? So those could be all mixed up in that particular interaction where people, patients may be hesitant to approach their providers for obesity treatment. And one last thing also comes to my mind is even people don't necessarily consider obesity as a disease, right? I mean, if you tell someone that so-and-so has got cancer, they don't say that, let me turn to my neighbor or my friend for what the treatment is going to be. They go to their provider. So, but when it comes to obesity and somebody has obesity and needs to lose weight, they will go to their best friend or the magazine or a neighbor for treatment. So all these factors probably contribute in some fashion.
Another factor that I find is that patients have had experience with doing some nutritional, dietary exercise, some intervention to lose weight, having success for a period of time and then regaining it. And then with that, feeling so upset with themselves because they regain their weight. And I think it takes patients a lot of energy, it takes any of us a lot of energy to kind of get in that right frame of mind and make that effort to make the lifestyle changes that are needed to lose weight. And if they're, you know, if they have a lot of other things going on in their life, if there's a lot of challenges that they're facing, they may not be ready. They may not be in that action mode, ready to begin a program.
Absolutely right. And here again, I think I would emphasize and inform those people, patients who think that way, that they are frustrated. And a typical response in that situation is like, look at this. I had lost my weight. I gained all the weight back. I'm good for nothing. I just have no willpower. I deserve this punishment, and on and on and on. But imagine it, as you said, take any other condition. You know, if hypertension is not easy to control, diabetes is not easy to control, that wouldn't be a typical response if your blood pressure is not coming down, that I am good for nothing. That's not how you would think. If your diabetes is not under control, that's not, you would say that, oh, I deserve this punishment. But obesity seems to be not a disease and something of a moral failure. It's a consequence of laziness and greediness. That's how it is seen. And therefore, that frustrating response can come out. Also, that happens when drug treatment is indicated for weight loss or obesity. And I have people say this, and I have some providers say this, that obesity medications are no good because once you stop them, you will gain weight. And I want to ask them that, which medication for chronic disease do you think work from the bottle? You have to take that medication in order for that medication to work. And such is the case with obesity as well. And that needs to be emphasized, and people need to be informed about this.
Right, looking at obesity as a chronic disease, not as a short-term solution. And also that just because they've lost weight doesn't mean that their job is done. That's really where it begins.
Yes. Obesity did not go away. Just because your numbers came down doesn't mean diabetes went away. Your sugar is under control. Diabetes is not cured. Sugar is under control. Same way, you lose weight, your weight has come down, quote unquote, obesity has not gone away.
So why do you think providers are reluctant to discuss a patient's weight?
Yes, and the action study that I mentioned, it also looked at this particular issue. And plus, I have thought over the years about this. And one of the things that comes to my mind is some of the providers could be underprepared to treat obesity or unwilling to treat obesity. But one of the biggest surprises in that action study was the providers had this kind of bias that their patients are not interested in receiving treatment. That's a very interesting observation because a similar question was asked to people with obesity. The question was asked to their providers, not exactly their providers. It's a group of people with obesity and group of providers. And people with obesity said, yes, I'm waiting for my provider to have a talk with me. I want this conversation to happen about my weight. And it's a huge number of people with obesity said that. And a huge number of providers said, I don't want to have a talk with my patient because they are not interested. So that's the assumption on their part that they're just not going to listen to me. Why bother? And one more thing would be some of them are providers are also unsure of how to broach that topic. You know, sometimes they have tried in the past, may have tried it not in the best way, and some patients can flare up and why you want to talk about my weight and so on and so forth. They want to just leave that alone. That can happen as well.
Well, when a provider's advice is just eat less and exercise more and the patient comes back and didn't lose weight, perhaps that's driving some of that perception. And part of it is really a need for more education on the treatment of obesity on behalf of providers to really get them more knowledgeable in how to effectively treat obesity.
Agree.
So we talked about stigma and bias playing a role in a patient's reluctance to discuss weight. It's important that providers create an environment that does not make a patient feel worse about their obesity. Can you describe what healthcare providers can do to look within their office setup that might make a patient feel more comfortable about discussing their weight?
Absolutely. That's such a great point that you are bringing out. I think I would start with the attitude of a provider. And that needs to be caring attitude and non-judgmental. It is not punishing people for their body weight, but it is to treat a disease, a chronic disease that they have. That needs to be an attitude that needs to come out. That is number one. That's where it starts, I would say. Number two would be it's not enough, I feel, that it's the provider's attitude is like this, but attitude of their staff in the clinic needs to be appropriate as well. It needs to reflect respect. Also, some level of knowledge, I would say, is necessary on part of staff because patients have the habit of asking many questions to their staff. And, oh, you know, I gained this few pounds. What should I do? And staff needs to not necessarily have, this is not about medical treatment, but it's providing support, which is non-judgmental. And they need to know, for example, what is the meaning of lapse, relapse, and collapse? And when I say that, I mean lapse is a temporary deviation from your plan that maybe you went out of town 3-4 days and you gained some weight. So that's a lapse. But don't let that lapse turn into relapse so that there is eventually collapse of your whole treatment program. And that kind of support is not a medical support, but that kind of support in terms of when a patient talks about that could come from staff. So that kind of knowledge is what I'm referring to. And obviously, of course, no fat jokes or none of that derogatory language that needs to be in clinic. Finally, it's the setup, physical setup of a clinic is important as well. If you are going to see people for obesity, it would make sense to have wider chairs that are available now, commonly available, wider exam tables or bigger gowns. And it is very, very hurtful for patients when they stand on a scale, weighing scale, and the scale has their weight is beyond this limit. So having a weighing scale that is bigger, big enough to accommodate people's weight, or larger blood pressure cuffs, and those kind of things that are simple, but it shows sensitivity and shows care for people suffering from obesity. And then there are things one can do. For example, one of my favorite ones is patients like privacy when they're checking their weight. I would rather keep that weighing scale in a corner that not anybody, everybody is not around there. It's not in a hallway, but it is in a corner where in the privacy of the corner, you can whisper that weight to tell that patient and not say, Mrs. Smith, you have, congratulations, you have lost 5 pounds and you are 300 pounds today. Mrs. Smith doesn't want to, others to hear that. So those kind of small things can go a long way.
Absolutely, or even worse. Whoa, you gained 10 pounds. What happened?
Yeah,
right. So yes, but I think staff sensitivity is very important. Equipment is very important. Blood pressure cuffs that are properly sized, and a gown that doesn't unnecessarily expose a patient that's too small. Those are real embarrassments for patients. And another area that I think is important is magazines that you have in your waiting room. If you have magazines or information where you're seeing, you know, young, thin people in with six packs and, you know, bikinis and stuff like that, that is not a healthy messaging, nor is the, you know, latest diet recommendation magazine, you know, in the magazines as well. A lot of the magazines have a different, you know, rapid weight loss diet on them. And that in turn gives that perception to that patient that weight loss should be quick, should be easy. And if it's not for you, what's wrong with you?
Yes, yes, very true. That's a very good point. Like, lose 10 pounds in 5 days. That's
right.
It's a terrible magazine to keep there. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, I would walk out into my waiting room sometimes and look at magazines and look at the articles on there. And it really, I think it's important that we all do that. There was one that had an article in there, When Not to Trust Your Doctor.
You know, good one.
So how patient...
Okay, anyway.
Go ahead. Were you going to say something else?
No, nah, it's all okay. Right. Yeah.
So how patients are perceived by their healthcare providers, as well as how providers and staff, can have a big impact on their care. Unfortunately, the perception that obesity is a character flaw rather than a metabolic disorder remains all too common, as we talked about. So what are some strategies that you recommend to help change misperceptions about obesity for your staff or for your patients?
Yeah, this is a really important one, but it's a big topic, and it's hard to cover in a short time, but I'll choose my number one in this area. What I try to do, be it a person I meet on the street or traveling on the plane who sits next to me, asks what I do, and I say that I am a physician and a researcher for obesity. They say something nasty about people with obesity, and here I go. And it's my job to change their mind in the available time in the flight. So one of the things I try doing is make it like why obesity is a disease. Because it's not enough to say obesity is a disease. It is important to say why it is a disease. Why it's not just about your willpower. And I start by saying that I make a statement that food... To start with, food does not cause obesity. And I say that, and then I get their attention. And then I explain how obesity develops. And for that, I give an example. I give example of edema. I say that if you see a patient who has swelling eye, face, legs, where what have you, what, and that's water retention, what would you say? What is your first thing going to be out of your mouth? Are you going to say that this person is drinking too much water? That's why he's retaining it? Or do you know that there is, we have very fine water balance in our body? Whatever we eat, whatever goes out, is balanced very nicely. But only when there is an impairment, maybe something to do with heart or kidneys or what have you, maybe there is, when there is an impairment in that water balance, that is when a person starts retaining that water. Same way, there are all these controls, and I can go on and describe to you for an hour and a half, all these controls on our food intake and energy expenditure that are already present. They try to keep our body fat in a range, not at one point, but in a range. When there is an impairment in one of those factors or multiple factors, that's when that body is unable to keep your energy stores in one limit and starts expanding. And that is what is called obesity. And so, and then I encourage them to ask questions and try to find faults in what I said and so on and so forth. But explaining that this is obesity. Obesity is not simply a definition of BMI above 30. That's not obesity. Obesity is that defect in your physiology that is unable to keep your energy stores within a limit. And if you understand that, then the rest of it becomes easier to accept.
Yes, I think that is really a key point, that the more we understand about obesity as a metabolic disorder, as a pathophysiologic dysfunction, the less we see it as a character flaw, the less we will have stigma and bias towards patients with obesity. I think that is an essential component for physicians, for other healthcare providers, for patients to understand and move away from that perception that it's just your fault that you have obesity. So what do you see as some of the next best steps for increasing the role of primary care plays in the treatment of obesity?
So primary care providers have a huge role, in my opinion, to play in treatment of obesity. Really, there are 100 million people in this country who need treatment, and we can't just depend on specialists for obesity. So, I mean, they're good to have them, but we do need primary care to play a role. And I have talked with many, and I have had many ongoing projects and efforts in this direction to understand what is going on and where does the shoe pinch, so to say. And one of the issues that I have come across universally is reimbursement for time and effort that needs to be out there. I mean, yes, we are making progress little by little in terms of reimbursement for treatment and outside of surgery. But that reimbursement seems to be one major, not the issue, but a major contributory issue. Second, I think, is awareness. Even primary care providers may or may not have the awareness that obesity needs to be treated, and it's not simply eat less, move more, don't ask me how to do it kind of thing. So there has to be more awareness about that obesity is treatable and should be treated, and not just don't treat only consequences of obesity. That's second. And third, of course, is training. That I went to medical school and I did not get a single lecture about obesity treatment. I didn't get a single lecture about nutrition for that matter. I mean, we seem to have providers, physicians, and other medical providers coming out without having treated even one person for obesity. I mean, they treat people with obesity, but not for obesity necessarily in many cases. So that training needs to be improved. And it is, there are efforts, I understand, but they need to be more widespread. So those sort of, I think, are key contributors that can reshape this whole issue.
And ideally, we would have a continuum of care that would begin with a primary care provider and perhaps advance to an obesity medicine specialist and then maybe to a bariatric surgeon, similar to what we have in cardiovascular disease, where we have primary care treating the majority of hypertension, cardiologists treating the more complicated cases, and cardiothoracic surgeons dealing with those that need surgery. So hopefully we can get to that same continuum of care in obesity medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very well stated. And I think it's more tools we have in the toolbox, the better off we will be.
So lastly, what is your favorite tip for healthcare professionals when it comes to treating obesity?
That's a good one. And there are many things one can talk about, but if I have to choose one, I like to emphasize on type of treatment I like to provide. And I use three words for that. One is the treatment that I like to consider is individualized treatment. I have to consider a person, not just press a button and get a printed diet, 1,200 calories, here you go, follow that diet kind of thing. Instead, I like to understand what is causing or what is keeping this person heavier or what was the medical history, personal history, family history, any other conditions that this person has, lifestyle, how does this person likes and dislikes, and all those things make it individualized treatment. The second part is, if I have to provide a diet plan, it has to, and the approach has to be practical. Something that people can follow and have compliance is important. If a person is following a lifestyle is in a particular way, and you recommend something that is completely 90 degrees or 180 degrees away from what they're doing. If somebody is vegan and you tell them that you got to eat non-vegetarian food, they don't want to, there is going to be no compliance, for example. So it needs to be a pragmatic approach, considering what that person likes, dislikes, and so on. So that's practical. And the third part would be cause-specific approach. Not that we know all causes of obesity today. I hope we can know it in 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, more causes than we know today. But I like to consider causes also because if you ignore a particular cause that can be modified, and then your efforts could be not as effective. For example, I like to find out how is somebody's sleep. Is it adequate? Is the quality and quantity okay? Because if that is not, and if that is going to contribute in some way through weight gain, and I keep treating that patient, no matter what I try, it may not be as effective. But sleep is just one example. There could be hypothyroidism for somebody, and that hypothyroidism, underlying contributor, should be treated. So those are some examples. So all in all, I like to say that the treatment needs to be individualized, practical, and cause-specific approach. That's how I would put it.
Just like we treat most every other disease, right? Well, thank you for being with us today, Dr. Durandar. You can find Dr. Durandar and Dr. Wiggins' presentation on the Obesity Medicine Academy at obesitymedicine.org. Dr. Durandar, where can our listeners find out more about your work?
Well, there are many spots, but one of them would be Texas Tech University, Lubbock. So if you just type in Texas Tech University and my name, links should show up about our philosophy or work, etc.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for your interest.
Thank you, Drs. Pennings and Durandar. For more information about obesity medicine podcasts and other resources from the Clinical Leaders in Obesity Medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. Loved the episode of Obesity, a Disease? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. The views expressed in this podcast episode are those of the show hosts and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please check back in soon for another episode of Obesity, a Disease.